What would you say you do here?
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
There are no more shenanigans, no more tomfoolery, no more ballyhoo.
It's gonna be a short cartoon casual shorts.
It's not gonna be that short, but it'll be somewhat short.
So it won't be booty shorts. It'll be like what? Describe the shorts.
Like capris, or clam diggers.
Clam diggers.
Yeah, maybe even stirrup pants.
There are restaurants, more than one restaurant called
clam diggers. I think I knew that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Clam digger pants or what else? Or shorts or what else?
Not culottes. Like more like culottes. Or a skort.
We are going back decades with all these style of shorts that were terrible.
But they've all come back and gone away.
How can they call the shorts that the girls had, the women had at Hooters, dolphin shorts? That's what we called them.
And I remember years ago on this podcast, we went through that, and I had never heard of dolphin shorts. I had to Google
them. Was that a Southern thing?
I think it was a Hooters thing.
Oh.
No, I think it was a Florida thing, maybe.
Okay.
And we looked them up, and actually, Charlie, rest his soul, heard that on the podcast and was like, how have you never heard of dolphin shorts? Like, I don't know, man. I grew up with a bunch of corn-fed Midwestern broads. Like, I didn't.
There are no dolphins out there.
We don't have dolphins up there. I mean, talk to your and that's when I was like, talk to your lake donkey wife about booty shorts up there. They're just the jeans that they finally wore off. They used to be long.
Those are the booty shorts.
And then they got cut off.
Yeah.
Into regular jean shorts
and then frayed forever.
And then they cut them off
up to
where
your
butt cheeks hang out.
Seam.
And that's what you wore with a bikini top and went to the lake or to the river.
Right.
That's how it gets. But in Florida, Everybody just wears short shorts, and they called them fucking dolphin shorts. But they're cut a certain way.
Yeah.
With like a scalloped.
We call it the Hooters cut.
The Hooters cut. Yeah. Oh, God. Anyway.
So it's going to be a shorter than normal podcast.
We don't even have to announce it. We can just be
okay,
like, all
fine.
Right, that's it.
I don't care.
So last week, we saw Civil War.
On Friday, yes,
on Friday, the new Alex Garland joint. Holy shitballs!
Yes,
I have not seen a movie that affected me like that to where I was still thinking about it hours and then a couple days afterward. Mm-hmm. Since I think it was Interstellar.
Yeah, we both didn't really know what to think when we left. Like we were kind of processing it because there were certain things that you thought they were going to go through or they would be really clear, but they kind of made it intentionally. Like, you didn't know whose side was what. Like, it wasn't like, oh, those are the people on the right or on the left.
Yeah, they didn't discuss politics. It was all based off of geographic stuff. And you have the Western forces, which was
Texas and California.
Texas and California.
Joining, which would be on the, you would think, political opposite.
Political opposite. And I have a theory on that, that the underlying thought was maybe that... you've got the typically California is a bit more liberal, quite a bit more liberal, left leaning, so on and so forth than Texas,
right?
Right, you know, historically, and Texas.
Well, Texas
is quite
in
a
play.
Bit,
it's a little bit in play.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah.
Anyway,
and,
go ahead.
And
yeah.
So you have your right and your left, right, which is your political ideologies, but they still believe in freedom of speech, the basic tenets of of the Constitution,
right.
There's a little blip in there. This is no spoiler. Like, you can't even spoil this movie. This movie is basically, it's like, like we mentioned last week, it's like, it's almost like a documentary that's filmed 8 to 10 years down the road, maybe.
And I do know, by the way, a good handful of people that say, I'm not going to even watch it because they don't want to.
They kind of don't want, it's kind of like people are like, the people that are afraid to go to therapy, they're afraid to reach within because they might see you stare long enough into the abyss. Right.
Well, one thing is that we have all the shitty news all the time, and it's like,
constantly.
Okay, do I need to go there? Movies should be kind of sometimes an escape, and that's not really what it is.
It really is not an escape. If anything, it's quite the opposite, which I like movies like that from time to time.
Yeah, I don't mind it if it forces something upon you. Like, I don't mind it.
You know, immediately after, like when the credits rolled, and I turned to you and said, I haven't felt that like anxious and pensive throughout an entire movie since Gravity, and you kind of agreed.
Because Gravity it didn't have a break in it, really.
There was no break
at all.
I was exhausted after I saw Gravity in the theater.
Even after you thought it was over, it wasn't over.
It really
in Gravity. Because how it ended, how she landed, and then another thing happened, and then Jesus.
Just over and over again.
Yeah.
So Civil War, the pacing is really cool. I thought it was done incredibly well. And But there's something, there's little tiny things in there. Like, so why would they show briefly a map of like the Western forces, which is like we said, Texas and, and
the
and
map
California.
Wasn't shown very long at all.
It was not. It was very, in fact, yeah. I think the shot in the trailer was longer than in the actual movie.
I think you're right.
And so I went into it thinking Alex Garland is one who doesn't really give resolution to his movies at all. Like any movie that I've ever seen of his, like Ex Machina, Annihilation, any of those, and now Civil War, there's no real resolution at the end, which a lot of people, it's uncomfortable topics, and it leaves you uncomfortable. That's okay. I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
And is that the type of movie I want to watch every time I go to the theater and watch a movie? Absolutely not, because that's not enjoyable.
No.
But it is thought-provoking, and it provokes provokes a conversation.
Yeah.
And so it makes you think. And I like movies that make you think, especially if it's not a documentary. You know, documentaries that make you think, it's like, wow, that's cool. And I learned some stuff. This is a fictional account. And it still made me think. And a lot of people, including yourself, think. And what I kind of came to the conclusion was that what would it take to unify Texas and California to become their own quote-unquote Western forces against whatever's going on in Washington, D.C.
D.C., basically, yeah.
And there's a little tiny blip. It's like blink and you miss it, or if you sneezed during this line of dialogue, you would miss it. And I think the key was...
What if you're reaching over for your Raisinets?
If you're crunching on your popcorn too
like
loudly.
If you had to, where's my Raisinets? And you had to look for the box of Raisinets, you might miss it.
You might miss it. Right. And what they said was, what they were talking about, they were wanting to... These reporters wanted to interview the current president, who's... on lockdown in the White House under attack by the Western forces. They're closing in, and they're trying to get to the president because they want to do interview him.
Which, by the way, to me, I thought that was a little bit far-fetched, because I thought, why is that motherfucker still there? You know what I mean? Why was he not moved out a while back when he knew that everybody was coming?
Yeah, exactly.
So I thought, that's a little odd. But anyway, go
ahead. It almost could be like a six-hour-long movie to fill in those gaps, but I like that some
but
of
it was
left
well.
Out. Yeah,
I'm not complaining.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
And when they mentioned, like, what would you ask him? What are you going to ask him? Well, do you think maybe we ask him, did you think that maybe in your third term as president you'd be able to make some changes? And that clicked, and I was like, I need to remember that when he said third term.
Because
for those of you listening that don't know this, the presidential term is capped at two elected terms.
After Roosevelt, during the war.
FDR, yeah.
Yeah.
And, so, God, he was, what was it, like 14 years he was in power?
Four terms, so he, wow, did he?
He did three terms.
Did he
die
in office? Jesus Christ, we
know
this.
He did, yeah, because Truman took over.
That's right.
Truman finished out the war.
He had three and a half terms.
Yeah, but part of it, he was reelected twice.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm trying to remember.
Because up to that, this is kind of interesting. The founding fathers didn't have term limits on the president. They just keep getting voted in, just let them stay.
If they keep making good choices, then keep voting them in, which is,
And then it's kind of interesting how, sidebar, be interesting to know what the conversation was like. Like, no one else is running against him, or they're not going to win. Why? You know, so, and then why did they make the choice to,
we
got to limit the terms?
So
anyway, go ahead.
My thought was that somehow that president, in some sort of corrupted way, somehow was able to stay president, or was able to convince Congress to, vote in
a
constitutional amendment to undo the term limit amendment.
That amendment, was that an amendment?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, okay.
And
it was. So anyway, go ahead.
The 22nd or 23rd amendment, somewhere around there.
Okay. Yeah, that's not what the movie's about. But
that's not what the movie's about.
Hint was third term. Here we go.
So what is it that California and Texas could agree on so much so that they formed their own secessionist government, basically, and forces? Yeah. And I think it would be rampant corruption in D.C. that was so far beyond what we've witnessed thus far.
Yeah, and it wasn't necessarily hard right or hard left corruption.
Yeah, they didn't.
That's why California and Texas said, we got to stop this. This is fucking weird.
It was subverting the Constitution. Yeah. And for better or worse, or whatever commonalities or different schools of thought that Texas and California have culturally as states, the one thing they can agree on is the Constitution.
Yeah.
And once that becomes violated so much, then I could see them getting together and going up against. That's my theory.
Right.
If I were to ever meet the writer and director, Alex Garland, and behind closed doors and sign a non-disclosure agreement, I'm reasonably certain that he goes, that's exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And would tell me that. I'm reasonably certain of that, because there's a few little context clues given, and that just kind of also is the simplest answer.
Yeah.
But it was, man, I urge anybody out there listening who hasn't watched it, go and watch it in the theater. It's a big, it's not bombastic in a way like a Michael Bay movie,
mm-hmm.
but it is gritty. And it's real,
and there's some really solid acting throughout, in my opinion. Like they did really well. Well, all the people that were fucking scared, getting shot at, shot up, whatever. There's a lot of just pretty accurate kind of war looking gore,
war reenacted violence.
Some dead bodies here and there. Not even here and there, whatever.
Like there's the one shot where they're getting shot at, and they just beat feet and put the pedal to the metal in that big ass Ford Excursion, and they run over a guy who just got shot dead, and they run over him because in that kind of situation, you're not going to swerve. You're going to keep going. That guy's gone. Yep. Sorry.
And it looked like a body that, I don't know if that was CGI or they had like a meat sack of a analog person.
I don't
person,
know what they did.
But it looked like you would think it would actually look, you know.
Yeah, I've never run over a body.
But
I have run over.
It's believable.
It's believable.
Like, well, that looks probably how it would look.
And it sounded like when I ran over an alligator in Florida.
There you go.
So that's all I have to measure it up against.
Boom.
But it's gory, and the telling the tale of another U.S. Civil War through the eyes of and lenses of photojournalists, of war journalists, such an incredible idea, because it's very stylistic with the different screenshots with the black and white photos, and it really
Would that be still called a civil war if it was just some people against D.C.?
It's definitely a civil war.
And not like the North and the South, where that was kind of D.C. also, but it was a little bit different. The Civil War that already happened, 1864.
You had a separatist, secessionist government that formed coalition forces against the Union.
But they were going right up to D.C. That was ground zero.
Right.
So, of course, not whatever. This is fantasy, and the Civil War that happened in the 1860s was real, but you know what I mean? It's a little bit different. It seemed like it was a little bit different for different reasons. We don't know what the reasons were. We don't know.
And that's the pure brilliance on Alex Garland's on him, because wow.
But we talked quite a bit about, you know, if you were on the fringes of left wing or on the fringes of right wing. What would you think if you were really one of the? Because I'm not on the fringe of anything. I don't know.
Yeah, me either.
Whatever. So, what would you think about that movie? Would you go, yeah, hell yeah, that's what we got to do? Or like, holy shit, maybe we shouldn't do that. You know, I don't know what they're. It's just uncomfortable feeling.
I think there's extremes on either end of any political ideology always.
Yeah.
And as my good friend Sean Hicks has said, the further left you go, far enough to the left, you get your guns back.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could see people watching that and going, fuck yeah, that's exactly what we need to do on both ends of the spectrum,
mm-hmm.
which is frightening, but that's not, that's what you have in a democratic society. You have people on the fringe,
and they've
always existed.
And the flag of the Western Alliance, I don't know if they were 13 stripes or not, but they were just two big stars. It looked like an American flag, but instead of 50 stars, there were two big stars.
There were two big stars. Which,
it looked like a regular stripe number. Didn't count them, though, if they were 13. Probably there were 13.
I think it was.
Yeah. Looked like an American flag with two big stars.
And that was,
California
and Texas. Interesting. But there was also, just not to limit the, you know, that, there's, you know, the scene with Jesse Plemons, which he's such a great actor. Pete and I were talking about this earlier today. We both kind of agreed that, while it would have been cool to see him in more of the movie, his role was perfect.
It was.
4 or 5, maybe 8 minutes of screen time, and that's about it. But he fucking murdered that role. Like, he really did.
Because he's such a good, awful character. It's like, that's enough of him. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
It's like you wouldn't want to have 30 minutes of him.
Like, I didn't like him hanging around for an entire season of Breaking Bad.
It's like, okay, I got it.
for those
it's like,
of you
it's like overdosing on maple syrup. It's like I got it. We got enough.
I got it. I can't untaste it for a couple weeks. For those of you who don't know, Jesse Plemons is the guy, for lack of a better term, what Aaron Paul, who played Jesse on Breaking Bad, Aaron Paul on set
called him,
gave him a nickname, Down Syndrome Matt Damon. Which
I'm laughing. I hate to laugh. I hate myself for laughing.
When I said that shit to my mom, who's worked with folks with developmental disabilities for like 30 plus years, when I said Down Syndrome Matt Damon, and she's like, wait, are you talking about Jesse Plemons? She knew his name.
Everybody knows what, because once you think of Down Syndrome Matt Damon, oh, that guy.
Which is so fucking funny to me.
It's hilarious.
But he was his character in Breaking Bad. To me, he was the most unnerving character in the whole series.
Oh, yeah. And he was amped up a little bit. Not amped up meaning like steroids. Amped up meaning whatever you want to call it.
He was like almost a true... like a psychopath.
100%. Or sociopath, I guess.
I don't know. He didn't manipulate people, though. So what is that? Because he really didn't. He just had no emotion.
I'd love to know the exact definition.
He had no emotion, but he had that attraction to... Remember the one lady with the dark hair?
Yeah.
He had this weird attraction to her. Yes. But there was also the scene when we... In Breaking Bad, during the train... When they did the train robbery and that kid on the methylamine. Yeah. When that kid witnessed the whole thing and they realized he had been standing there the whole time.
Yeah, we got to get rid of him.
It was just dead silence for like 15 seconds. And then all of a sudden you hear, no, and just boom, just blows the kid away, shoots the kid. Just murders like a 10-year-old boy.
Without continuing expression
and
or whatever.
And he's just like, oh, yeah, we had to do that. Yeah. Now we got to get rid of it. And he was like that. The rest of that season, Jesus Christ, like that guy fucking was unnerving. So now I can't unsee that, and it's almost like he just kind of leaned into it with his weird little bit role in Civil War.
He's definitely carved out a place for himself in Hollywood.
Yeah, I'd say so.
For that
fucking down,
like he's not going to ever break out of that. He may never break out of that role.
No, I don't think he's a leading man material anyway. No. And he doesn't need to be. That's fine.
No,
but anyway.
It'd be funny if he's like the funny in person, if he's like the total prankster joke funny guy, like a complete, like the funniest guy at the drive-thru.
Like he's just always cutting up and cracking jokes and people are right. Like, wow, you really are Down Syndrome Matt Damon.
He and Matt Damon ought to hang around.
I would love to see those two hang around each other. I think that would be funny
as
hell.
They ought to do a podcast together. Now that would be funny.
Oh my God.
Like they ought to have a show. Podcast.
Oh my times. God! Like Bad Will Bunting or something stupid like that.
God. Yeah, that was anyway. That was
his acting was incredible. Stephen. Oh God, he was on The Newsroom. He was also in other things that Alex Garland has done. Devs. Did you ever watch Devs on FX? That was another Alex Garland. It was a miniseries.
Wait, who was in The Newsroom that was in this movie?
Really?
You're asking me?
The one black dude that, you know, ended up, you know, the old news reporter guy that tagged along with them. He was the...
I'm missing it.
NSA informant for Operation... Not Operation... He was the NSA informant who predicted Osama
totally
bin Laden.
That.
Remember that? Like,
yeah. I totally blank. Well, I mean, he was black, so...
Oh, my God. He's not that black.
I'm kidding.
He's pretty mocha.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was in that, and he was in a few other things. And I was like, oh shit! All right, I like this guy, but his acting is always just impeccable. But let's talk about fucking Kirsten Dunst, because Kirsten Dunst and I are like not quite the exact same age. She's like 8 months older than me, or something like that. And I've had a crazy crush on her since I was like 14, right? Part of that has been following her career a bit because. She comes out with a movie, I'll watch it, usually.
Right.
Because usually they're good. Like,
it's not very often at all.
Well, it was for a while, and then I think she became a mom and decided, fuck this, I've got plenty of money, I don't need to act, I'll raise my kids. And now that she's like 43, she's like, oh, you know, I can. She was impeccable, but she also was not known for dramatic roles.
No, you're right.
I can only think of like three or four. She was in The Virgin Suicides as like a late teen, early, probably she was probably in her early 20s, and that's a phenomenal kind of indie flick. Uh-huh. There is also I would go so far as to say that her role in Interview with the Vampire. Do you ever see that movie?
Yes. Yep.
Her role is like the crazy little girl. She's like 11 years old.
Oh,
to
yeah.
Watch her grow in that. And I'm not a huge fan of that movie or even those books because I'm just not a vampire fan. But I liked what they did with her role because we studied her role and like how complex of a role that was when I was in first year like drama student in my freshman year of high school, because the movie had only been out for like 3 years at that point. And the drama teacher gave it. It's like, this is a prime example of someone who's just born to act.
Uh-huh.
Because that role is her physically as an 11-year-old girl, which is how old she was when she was being filmed. She's uh-huh. 11 years old. But because it takes place over the course of like 300 years, she has to grow up and mature, but still physically be 11 years old. Uh-huh. But her character gets more and more mature, and dialogue gets a little bit different and more complex.
You're a little more sophisticated.
And a little more, quite a bit more sophisticated because she's 300 years old. They made her a vampire when she was 11. So you knew she had the chops to do that. But you see movies like Bring It On and like all these other kind of teen movies and shit.
Yeah.
You never really got to see that
until
she did The Virgin Suicides, which is, like I said, it's a great flick. I'm sure you can find it somewhere streaming. It's a great movie.
I have not seen that.
And then again, not again for like 12 years.
Big old break.
Well, she did Melancholia, which is, I think that's Lars von Trier. Super dramatic, in-depth, dark, twisted.
How many years ago was that?
8.
Okay. So it's not quite the Locust schedule. Or not the Locust, the Cicadas now.
It's not quite the Cicada schedule.
Which are coming out now. So it's not,
And so then I was like, well, shit. When she sat down in an interview a few weeks ago that I watched with her, she goes, this is the most important role I've ever taken, and I feel like this is the best work I've ever done.
Yeah.
And I've never had a problem with any of the work I ever did, whether it was comedic, whether it was, you know, nudity, whether it was this or that. I like doing the work because I like the way, I like getting into a character's head.
Right.
And I like doing that. Whether it's a cheerleader or whether it's an 11-year-old vampire or it's this or it's that, I like doing that. But this is the first time I've been truly, truly proud of what I did. And I if I never act, have another role ever again, I'm glad that I did this movie. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
That's a big old statement.
So it's a huge statement from an actress who's been in it since she was like 10, 11 years old.
Yeah.
Who's now 43. So like, I knew going in that at least she was going to do an incredible job, but like the whole ensemble, the Hispanic guy, I can't remember his character's name. He played, oh my God, Pablo Escobar in Narcos.
Oh yeah.
That guy's a phenomenal actor anyway. Yeah. He did a great job in Narcos. Like he really just killed that role. So I knew he was going to be good. And then the Steven guy, the black dude that was on the newsroom and a handful of other things, he was going to be great too. What I didn't know going in was that Nick Offerman has like not even 3 minutes of screen time.
Yeah.
Because he's the one who plays the president. I was kind of a little disappointed at that because he's a tremendous actor with huge range too. But
yeah, it was really minimal, super minimal for him.
But it was a very thought-provoking movie, and I told my mom, I'm like, I think you were sitting there. I said, I think it should be required like watching for anybody.
Yeah.
Really.
Like, you know, you don't know how to walk away from it. It's like,
yeah.
And again, I would love to talk to someone that, again, it was considered hard right or whatever, you know, and what they thought of that. I'm sure they would go, yeah, that's what should have happened on January 6th, I'm guessing. I don't know.
Maybe
they would think.
I guarantee you there's people out there that believe that. And are they unhinged, or is it just like less than or fewer than 0.5% of those people? So and like I said, I can see both ends of that spectrum being like that. Are you okay?
What was that noise?
Did you hear something?
You didn't hear that because your headphones are on, mine aren't.
I didn't hear anything.
Maybe it was the cat that jumping on the floor. I don't know.
That damn kinda, cat.
Kind of sounded weird. Have you heard of this? I'm gonna this is a similar topic, but have you heard of? I think this guy's YouTube channel is called Channel 5. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I don't think so.
Okay, so he was on Lex Friedman recently.
Okay,
I never heard this guy either, but he's in his 20s. He's got a really good. Really good following. He goes to he goes to places or situations and he really kind of exposes some things, but he's kind of funny, but he's really super edgy. And like he went to the tunnels in Las Vegas, talked to all the homeless people.
Okay.
He went down to the borders and talked to all the people that are down there that are trying to, you know, all the patriots. And then then he went there and was with the Mexicans for a while, and he actually crossed the Rio Grande with them and to see what's really going on and trying to.
This is sounding familiar. Like maybe I have seen little clips here and there.
Yeah, and it's just called Channel 5. It's so funny because they discovered. Like, if they were at some place and they looked like they were kind of media because they had some kind of a camera and whatever, and they said, you know, what are you with? And you said, well, we're Channel 5. You just started making this up. Like, we're Channel 5. Okay, good. You know, you guys must be media. And they figured, well, that was easy. We just said we're Channel. And then they looked it up. Apparently, Channel 5, because it's all over the place, but it's not really trademarked or something. Something weird how they got this. So now they're called just Channel 5 on YouTube.
Oh, that's
YouTube.
Funny as hell. I love
like,
that.
It was a huge gap that no one thought, or something. So they're Channel 5. And they're not a channel at all.
They're a YouTube channel, but they're not Channel
they're
5.
There's no
they're
5.
They're not on broadcast. They're
no,
not.
There's no 5.
Are they UHF or VHF,
right.
Paul?
So they had a 2 or 3 hour interview with Lex Fridman. They were talking about that because they asked him, because he'd been to places. He was talking about, you know, some January 6th, the border stuff. The you know, he would go to like hot spots during the news, like Portland, talk to people, you know, really trying to figure out what's going on, but truly try to talk to both sides. But he's also kind of funny, but you have to kind of watch what he does, you know. And he's got a big freaking following. So I think Lex asked him, so what do you think? Are we heading for a civil war? Or, I don't know if they talk about the movie at all, but because it was not that long ago, it was on like a week ago. And he goes, I don't think so. He goes, I really, and he's pretty thoughtful. And he goes, I think for the most part, Americans really are too lazy, and they appreciate going to a movie where it's relatively safe and getting a big fucking expensive Coke and a thing, and they want to go to a fast food drive. Like, because when they really sit down and think about it, are they going to actually blow up this country enough? You know, I don't mean blow it up, but fuck it over enough to where we're going to lose all of our laziness, stuff that we're so accustomed to now.
Right.
Our cushy lifestyle, all of our big flat screen TVs. I've got 3 of them in this facility here, you know, and they're not that expensive. You know what I'm saying? It's just too easy.
While I don't want to go to Chili's for a meal anytime soon, I don't want somebody limiting the fact that I could.
Right. So he just thinks, because I don't think there's enough people. Yeah, I think there's more people that know it's not perfect, but that would probably stop, or there wouldn't be enough people to really have a true civil war,
right?
And scuttle everything that we've got, because I just don't think it's going to happen. And Lex was kind of pushing you. What do you mean you don't want it to? He goes, no, I really don't think it's going to. You know. Anyway, it was interesting. I'll try to send you the link for that. You can listen to his interview.
Yeah, I'll be looking up Channel 5 because it sounds right up my alley.
But it reminded me a little bit of this movie because that's the unsettling feeling part of it, right? At the end of the Civil War movie, you think, God, could that really, really, really happen? You know, when January 6th happened, you know, I was watching it live too, and I saw it, there they go, and they're busting into the Capitol building, and I didn't think that the country was going to be lost at all, because I thought to myself, you can't do that. There's consequences
here,
there's big time, you know? And the military won't look. The military didn't allow Trump to do some of the stuff he wanted to do.
Right.
Now we're going to get
there
off.
There,
we're getting off on this political. That's not what I meant. You know, there are checks and balances with the military. People swore to the Constitution, and they're not. You know, there was conversations about that. Like the Joint Chiefs of Staff guy butted heads with Trump.
Yeah.
That's a publicly known,
and that's a good thing, and that has nothing to do with anything to do with support
left
or not
or right
support
wing,
or left
it's
or
like
right.
We're not going to do it, this.
It's a good thing that somebody would butt heads up against Biden or Obama
anybody
or fucking FDR.
That's in that
that's
not how this works.
Yeah,
you know,
and the checks and balances is why things work.
Right,
and it's kind of like to bring up another hot button topic is the kid that was you know, was in the driving in the car about a little over a year ago, and two people like driving too fast.
Almost a year ago to the day, almost.
Yeah. You know, right. He was sentenced yesterday.
Yep.
And he was sentenced to 18 years in prison. Mm-hmm. He's 16.
Yes.
16 or 17. He's 16 when it happened. So either 16 now or 17. Should be 17. Mm-hmm. So 17 years old, going to prison for, and that started yesterday, last night. Like they took him straight from court. from the sentencing hearing to county lockup, and within a week he'll be down. He'll be in a juvenile facility until he's 18, and he's going to go right into the prison system. So, 18 years prison, he has to serve minimum of 80% of it, and that's what he'll can get out after 80% of it served with good behavior, and then he'll be on 5 years of supervised probation. So there are people that are saying that's not good enough. That's he killed two people. He should be get prison for life and da 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 da. Well, what separates the U.S. judicial system from like a lot of really terrible countries out there is due process and checks and balances. And the simple fact of the matter is that a 17-year-old who may or may not have been intoxicated, I don't know the toxicology ever
it
came
was
out.
Definitely manslaughter. There's no doubt about
it
that.
Wasn't, yeah, it wasn't murder. It wasn't second-degree murder. It wasn't even third-degree murder. It was manslaughter.
Yep.
And it was involuntary manslaughter because he didn't – he or no, it was voluntary manslaughter, and they dropped it to involuntary. So and the thing is proving intent. And there's all these people calling for –
Well, say, well, it wasn't like, – he chose to drive that I know what they're saying, yes. But that is not what that means.
He also is underage and doesn't have the ability to make those choices. Right. If you want to have a bigger conversation about letting people under the age of 18 drive, that's a different conversation.
Right.
But the bottom line is that he's a minor who's not really capable of making proper choices.
And drive a car and with then his 700 or 800 goddamn horsepower.
Exactly. So manslaughter is what he got. Mm-hmm. He got involuntary manslaughter.
I think it was a proper charge.
I think it's a proper charge.
And a proper sentence, probably.
And a proper sentence.
As much as some people don't like it.
And you know who clued a lot of people into this whole thread of comments on Facebook?
No.
That said the same thing. He's like, stop being so retarded, which was funny. It was Jeff Haney.
Okay.
And he goes, you face-to-face murder is 10 years. If it's second degree or first degree, it doesn't matter. Then they start proving intent. Then it goes up from there and can go to life. He didn't murder anybody. The definition of manslaughter versus murder
is very clear.
And there's a distinction needs to be made. He got 18 years. His life is not going to magically be amazing in 18 years when he gets out of prison.
Right.
His life is over before it ever began.
Right.
So he's got a life sentence already.
Well, people were kind of complaining too that they thought, I have no idea about him, what he was doing, waiting for trial and that kind of thing. They said he wasn't showing any remorse. He was out doing stuff and doing that. And like I'd probably have a hard time getting out of bed and not throwing up every day.
Yeah,
if
right.
I did that, you know, everybody's different, you know. But so I don't. That I think some people are upset that
you've
they
also
thought,
got. A, yeah, and you've got a lot of adults talking about how a kid should or should not act. He's a fucking kid.
Right.
He's fucking 16.
Yep.
He's 16, and he's gonna have to live with the fact that two of his friends are dead, and it's because of him.
And exactly.
And it was his negligence. Yeah. Yeah. They didn't get into the car that night, and him think I'm gonna kill them. That's what that chick did or tried to do. About a year ago, and she just got sentenced like 4 or 5 months ago. Did you hear about that? I think it was in Missouri.
I was going to say, what are we talking about? Yeah,
this girl found out that her boyfriend was sleeping with her best friend and decided that her life was going to be over, and so was theirs. So like, she was like, hey, you guys, let's go for a drive and do this. And she drove as fast as humanly possible into a concrete embankment, killing one of them, maiming the other one, and she survived.
God, she survived. Okay.
So because there were
Attempted murder, at least, and murder.
Well, it was attempted murder and first degree murder. They were able to prove that.
Yeah.
And she got both of those charges, and is going to be in prison for the rest of her natural life. And she's like 17. Mm-hmm. That's a difference between there's a difference between that and what happened with this kid here locally.
That's one of the worst parts about social media, because you get to see how either intentionally or just plain stupid and ignorant people are, and they choose to show that in front of the rest of the world.
And that's why I'm so glad that those people are not in the judicial system in any sort of power, because our system, for all of its faults, still has checks and balances
that
keep the president from doing certain things, a vice president from doing certain things, all the way down to a county prosecutor who took or a city prosecutor who decided, I'm going to make an example of this fucking kid and put him in prison for life. He doesn't deserve life in prison.
Right.
He doesn't at all.
Now, didn't the initial judge recuse himself or something?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know why anybody, no one, you almost would have to recuse yourself across the board in this town, you'd think. In a way,
so many people know each other, but there's also people in this town that don't know each other and don't have personal conflicts and personal contacts with each other.
Yeah.
I have a pretty decent friend of mine who's his wife's a teacher, and he was a judge for about 10, 15 years, but I think he's back to being an attorney. And I had asked him, and I said, "You people know your wife and know you and you've been living in this town for like 40 years. Like, how do you not have to recuse yourself?" He goes, "Because I don't have personal contact with most of the people in this town.
Mm-hmm.
I have a small group of people I associate with that I'm friends with, and I have people that I will and will not give legal advice to, and that helps keep me from having to recuse myself from 50% of all cases, like mm-hmm. some of my cohorts in the judicial system," which is, I think that's really smart on his part because he's able to be impartial.
And a lot of people like that, probably in smaller, not just Kingman, in other smaller towns, they have a little bit of means. You know, they probably go out of town at least to go in public to go to restaurants and stuff. And,
yeah.
Because they don't want to be, "That's the judge that put my son away," or
yeah.
and run into those or whatever that is. You know, they just don't want to do that. So they go away to enjoy time away and be in public.
Or they do their time, their 15 or 20 years, then retire.
Yeah.
And then move. Like three.
Julie Roth.
Yeah, Julie Roth. I think Judge Chavez moved away,
mm-hmm.
which is, I was, you know, friends with his daughter and son, closer to the son, and I had asked him multiple times. I said, "You've put away a lot of people. Don't you fear for your life?" And he goes, "If I feared for my life, I would not be a good judge."
Right.
So I make those decisions in spite of it, not because I'm not scared.
Right.
I thought that was incredible.
Yeah, that is a good.
I was like 19 when he told me that, and I was like, "That's the gravity of that." Took me years to really understand what he said.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always liked him. And he also kind of looked the other way when we were smoking pot in his garage and playing in our stupid punk band. And his wife was so sweet that if we had band practice on Sunday, she knew we were stoned, and she would always make a big old pot of pozole.
Nice.
And just, "Hey, boys, would you like some pozole? I made some for you." And just bringing out these giant bowls, tons of weed smoke in the garage. Didn't even give a shit. Judge's wife didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
But anyway.
That's excellent.
But, that's the system having checks and balances that prevents certain things. When you start removing those checks and balances, mm-hmm. things can go awry, which is, I think, what happens is, I think that's, like, the basis for Civil War.
Right.
Is something went awry.
Something went awry. It didn't work. You know, the Founding Fathers were pretty smart with their checks and balances. If you look at the history of how the government was actually formed when they were having, you know, the Continental Congress or they were whatever, there were a huge array of how they were going to form the government. Like someone said, they want a life-appointed president, you know, or whatever. And some were even, we need a three-panel president. I mean, there were all these, they were really hammering this out.
So many different iterations.
And how they were
going
to do the whole government thing. But there is one little mistake that because the president appoints the Supreme Court justices, and I think that's a little bit of a hiccup. A little, because it's a little bit lopsided right now. You know, Mr. Trump got three, and again, I'm just not a Trump fan, but I used to work for the Republican Party, so I'm just going to get that out there. But holy cow, he was one term president, got three appointments.
That's such an anomaly. Yeah,
that's such an, but it happened, and it can happen. It did happen, and if he's going to appoint ones that are going to be leaning more to the right or whatever, and so that kind of goes against full kind of checks and balances.
But the check and balance on that is the presidential appointment is that can't Congress stop that?
Stop which part?
The appointment of the justice, the Supreme Court justice.
They can they can drag their feet. I think the Senate is are the people who do the
Senate does the whatchamacallit hearings.
Judicial hearings or whatever. Yeah,
I think they have the ability to stop it, but it takes a strong majority or whatever it's called.
I think the Senate may be the only body that actually votes them in. I don't think the House votes them in.
I think you're right. I think it is just the Senate. So there is a balance to that. Now, I don't really agree with lifetime appointment for justices.
Supreme Court, yeah, that's a little bit.
I don't agree with that. I've never understood why that was a thing. I feel like that was an old-timey thing that was thrown in there. Maybe that was one of those, all right, well, you don't like my idea of a lifetime appointed president, but how about we compromise and do Supreme Court justices are appointed by the president and the justices are lifetime.
I'm sure they hammered on that for a long time to figure that out. And they're probably, again, I think the Founding Fathers would be disappointed that we haven't adjusted the Constitution a little bit.
Yeah.
They probably, some of them would come back now and go, yeah, that wasn't quite, we see what's happening here, see, you know, 78, 9 years ago, what happened? You guys need to work on that.
Yeah.
Because we didn't anticipate whatever this is.
There hasn't been a constitutional amendment since 1990 or something.
Right. And the
that was the pay increases.
Right. It's not like, oh, that's really that's what we're going to argue about is pay increases. You know what I mean?
Pay increases.
Right.
But like,
there should be more important amendments that are taking place that are more critical, how things are structured, and it wasn't quite right. And because people hold up the founding fathers like they could do no wrong. They're 100%. They're not. They're probably Ben Franklin be the one to come back up. Look, we're fallible. We did the best we could at the time.
Yeah, that's
you can't. You guys can't hold this banner like the founding fathers were 100% right. That's why they had amendments.
One of
obviously.
My favorite speeches of all time is Joe Pesci in With Honors at Harvard when he talks about. Well, it's in the same speech. He's like, sir, why, and it's not Buckley. Who's the other guy?
Oh, they had the debate.
Yeah, the
Buckley and the gay guy.
Yeah,
is that what you mean, Buckley and? What were those debates?
But the not Buckley, but the other one.
The liberal guy that he would.
Yeah. He plays a conservative professor, like a conservative poli-sci professor at Harvard, and I think it's brilliant. And it's funny because I didn't find out until way, way later on.
Well, you're talking about the Buckley and so-and-so debate.
Yeah,
would
Buckley
debate
and so-and-so, the so-and-so.
The so-and-so guy.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I
back
can't,
in the
60s. Gore Vidal.
There you go.
Gore Vidal plays this professor. He's a real hard-ass, real shitbag.
Yeah.
He plays a Buckley, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And he goes, sir, why are you here at Harvard? Well, trash mostly. And Harvard produces a lot of high quality trash, as we can see here, in like a lecture hall. Mm-hmm. And he kind of berates him. And it was in the middle of it was a question he had proposed to, you know, his class, the professor did. It's like, what makes the Constitution, what's the true brilliance of the Constitution? And there's a few people that say the things, and he kind of shouts them down and makes them feel stupid. Mm-hmm. And then Joe Pesci is like being disruptive, and he's a bum. You know, he's a homeless guy, and as he's walking out, he goes, "You don't want to know what the true brilliance of the Constitution is? Is that it can be changed? The founding fathers were brilliant men, but they were still men.
Mm-hmm.
They were farmers. They were just bums,
right?"
They knew that they knew that the future held all sorts of amazing things, but they didn't know what they were, and they knew that the country would need to change.
Mm-hmm.
And if it didn't change, it would get left behind. They'd be right back in the same mess in a generation or two.
Right.
The brilliance of the Constitution is that it can be changed, and it should be more often than it has
perhaps
been.
One of the more not-
and then he walks out, and he walks out of the lecture hall. So it's true.
So one of the more important ones, like alcohol, that was important too to make that bit, but perhaps one of the more important ones was the limitation of the president, because that was the founding fathers established the presidency. That was it, and they limited it. So that was a pretty big one.
Yeah.
You know, that was a big everything, kind of the structure of the initial Constitution, they changed. I know that's what amendments do, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It wasn't a new thing that came along, like, oh, we're going to make it alcohol legal. Now we're going to make it legal. You know, it wasn't one of those things. It was a fundamental change of one of the offices of the president.
Right.
It was a big change. So, anyway, there should be more of those probably.
I wonder what the founding fathers would say about it. They go, wait, you guys haven't changed it in how long?
Right.
Holy shit. What's wrong with you
Aren't
guys?
Are you guys embarrassed for this kind of thing?
Maybe. I mean, I would assume as such.
Like, we weren't that perfect. I
think Ben Franklin would be real happy about penicillin.
Right.
Especially with the how much of a Lothario he was.
Oh, yeah. So I could fuck anybody I wanted and not get all fucked up.
That's crazy.
Like, kind of like that.
And women like bald guys now? Huh, I don't have to work as hard. So awful. So awful.
So see or don't see the Civil War.
Yeah, but you've been warned. And if you don't see it, I think most people should see it. Oh, speaking of, I was going to bring this up. I just found this out today. So Pete's son is, I think, a sophomore.
Pete's son.
Pete, who was on last week, his son, I believe, is a sophomore, and they're doing a unit in history on Kennedy, and they watched the Zapruder film.
Okay.
I went to a pretty progressive fucking high school and took some progressive classes. I had great progressive teachers. Never once did we watch Kennedy get shot frame by frame.
Ted Kennedy was shot?
Oh, my God. Where were you the day that Kennedy was shot?
How old are you when Kennedy was shot? Ted Kennedy was shot? That's when Ted Kennedy was alive.
Yes. No, Ted Kennedy just died. Okay. No, a few years ago.
So yeah, that's kind of that's a big, huge piece of American history.
Isn't that cool that, so, that they watch the back
watch
into the
get
left
blown off?
I think it's cool that they examine it, and then he was 15 or whatever, was telling Pete that, you know, I think it's crazy that someone actually caught it on video.
Yeah,
and having as a 15-year-old. Having the perspective of someone who's only been around for 15 years, and the whole time he's been alive, there's been decent cameras on phones.
Right.
Everyone's basically had one in their pocket since before he was born.
It's probably an eight millimeter camera. I meant like my father had one.
Yeah,
of those.
That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah. And he.
Bell and Howell or Bell, the big fucking green, blue, turquoise.
The ones you have
color.
To spin yourself, maybe. Or maybe Zapruder's was fancy enough.
It's probably had batteries.
Had batteries.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's cool that this kid, a 15-year-old, had the perspective of it's amazing that somebody actually caught that on film, because nobody had, you know, they didn't have smartphones back then, they didn't have the cameras. And then I was like,
but not of the gunshot. Like, you know, there are the people that were. And here's a so-and-so had their camera on this street corner when you turn the corner.
Yeah.
But you don't see because it's down. You can't see it from
right.
there. But one camera happened to be on him.
One
at that
camera
time.
Happened to be on him, and it's frame by frame, and you can see it. Yeah. You can see the shot from the front, and then another shot from the. Like,
you cannot see the shot from the front.
Yeah, you can.
No, you can't. You can't.
Oh no, he goes forward first and then no, you
I'm,
see a shot
I'm
from
single
the
gun theory, by the way, just to let you know. I'm all in 100%.
No, I shouldn't say okay, not from the front. If I remember right, you see him slump forward.
Yes.
And then it appears that he gets shot from the front or from the side that shoots his head back.
But it's
I'm talking about second gunman. That's
right,
not
right,
I'm not
right.
trying to get into the conspiracy.
Oh, okay. I got
I'm just remembering I'm trying to remember how his head moves.
Right.
Because I've watched it frame by frame before,
right?
And I know that he got shot multiple times. It's the magic bullet theory and all that other horseshit. Not all that,
see,
but
three
I just,
bullets. One missed. Well, I think one missed completely, Kennedy, and then two hit, and one through the neck, and then the other one was his head,
right?
You know, and then but we have to get off. But it was like those are very small high speed bullets, and they will go in pretty easily without moving your head around much,
right?
But it blows its. Out the backside is what it did, and that's
that's the recoil
the
from it.
The force
from
is plow.
Blowing out the front
right.
is what
say,
shot
oh,
him
so
back.
You got shot from the front.
That's right.
That's
I knew
not how that. Works.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah.
Now people are going to argue with this and say it's not what it was. Whatever. That's we're not going
they,
down.
They
that
can,
road.
But it, but what you just said, the ballistics. I forgot about the small caliber, high power.
Yeah.
There's
and it was not a mushrooming. Thing. It wasn't like a. Because they're like distorted too. They're slightly distorted, but it's like, why is this not all mushroom and blown apart? Well, they've had those same ammunition pieces going through skull thing, and they're doing the same thing, and they don't change that much.
They don't.
They don't. It's not designed to mushroom round.
Yeah, it's a long distance round.
Yeah, and it's not pointed either. It's kind of.
The hell was
that noise?
Was it thunder? I hope not. My window's down.
Oh, that could be a motorcycle starting. That's a motorcycle.
Oh.
There it is.
Why the?
Didn't that sound really weird?
It did sound weird, and it felt like the floor was shaking a little bit.
No, that was the cat right there. That one
fucking with the motorcycle and the cat. Paul and I are. I think we're afraid this place might be haunted.
It's a cat on a motorcycle.
It's a cat on a motorcycle. Jesus Christ. You're a single shot theory kind of guy.
Not
no,
single
a single
shot,
gunman.
Single
gunman.
Gun theory.
Single gun theory.
Yeah. Anyway. And CIA, Cuba. Okay, I know.
Yeah, we know. We know it was the government. There are people out there, I know people, that have almost got me convinced that it had to do with the mafia being in cahoots with the CIA.
Now, what I do want to know is why, I mean, I would like to know this. I think Biden, because there were all the documents supposed to be opened up.
Yeah.
Like last year or 2 years ago or something.
And I think
and then
Trump
Biden
released,
said, no, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, Trump released some, but it was like 80% redacted.
Right. And then I think Biden said, no, we're not going to show that. Now, the question is why? Maybe he just doesn't want a bunch of people all over the place just wondering, oh, that's wrong. This is wrong. The mistakes were going to be made in the investigation. You know, the period end of story was 1963. So, or four, I don't know when the actual investigation took place, probably in 1964.
I think the Warren Commission convened, or not convened, but was concluded by 65, I think.
Okay. Well, anyway.
But still, it would be great to have all of that just complete and total transparency. Hey, look, we did this, right. And we did this because of this.
Right.
We can't go back and undo it.
Right.
And nobody is going to be put on trial for fucking war crimes or anything like that because everybody's all fucking dead.
Right.
Now,
I wonder if there is actual proof, and I don't mean like speculation or, you know, and having some, what are those charts with the pictures and all the yarn attaching?
Oh, my God.
What are those fucking called?
I don't know, the CSI.
there's a word for those things.
Yeah.
Because you can do that with anything or anybody.
You really can. You
have it look evil.
Yeah, yeah. Have it look totally, really, really bad.
Like, I'm connected to the airport authority.
I am. You are. You are.
And you have an error going from me to Dave French. Because he was the director of the Kingman Airport.
These two are,
and
secretly,
I was on the commission.
They're in.
I was on like boom, boom, boom.
These guys are in conspiracy cahoots together.
Conspiracy cahoots. What was that from?
That's from the newsroom. I'm rewatching the newsroom.
Oh yeah, that
I'm in like season two. It's like it's when Neil Sampat is trying to, he's doing the fake troll thing to smoke out the guy who threatened Will.
Cahoots.
Conspiracy cahoots and. And Sloane Savage, she goes, conspiracy cahoots, really? And he's like, in order for me to actually get in with these trolls,
it's
I have to sound like an absolute moron. And it's so funny.
Conspiracy cahoots.
Okay, one last thing I got to bring up. Speaking
Thank
of conspiracy
God.
Cahoots.
Yes.
There is a, and I urge you to watch it because you'll understand where some of my humor comes from.
Okay.
There's a documentary on Netflix called The Antisocial Network. And it's
I've
about,
heard of this.
It's about 4chan.
Okay.
About the beginnings of 4chan.
How long
where,
has this been
where
out?
It came from? Not even a month.
Okay, because there was another conspiracy cahoots documentary kind of thing.
Well,
from that was I thought it was about 4chan and how who the guy is. Remember, there was like they were trying to find out who the guy was.
Well, yeah, he was anonymous for a long time.
Right, but that was
he
like
went by
a
the
year or two
Moot.
Ago or something.
No.
I thought I saw this thing.
Well. Anyway. I mean, he came clean as to who he was. People figured out who he was 15 years ago. But, like,
right.
4chan went live, like, over 20 years ago now.
Wow.
Which is kind of blows my mind a little bit and makes me feel old. Because right. I remember when it was kind of in its infancy. I mean, I wasn't, like,
Excuse
on the...
me.
Bless you.
Sorry.
But it goes through how it influenced pop culture, how toxic it became, mm-hmm. how that's where Anonymous came from. That's why Rick Astley has another second breath in his career because of Rick Rolling is where it started. All these things that I knew, and I didn't realize just how culturally relevant that one dirty, nasty, sweaty little website was.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I still kind of go there every once in a while just to check in and see, oh, yeah, it's still the fucking soft white underbelly of the internet. But the last, like, probably 30 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes of the documentary, of like a two-hour documentary, is all about QAnon.
Okay.
And how it started as on 4chan and went over to another 8chan.
Now, you told me, is it true? You told me it started out as a joke.
It 100% started out as a joke. So they talked to the people that were involved in it.
Yeah.
And they talked to one guy who was the guy who was doing, like, the breakdown, who was getting fed information, like, a little bit before it got posted on 4chan or then later on 8chan. Mm-hmm. And they talked with him, and he's like, they completely fleeced me. Like, I was deep involved in this and thought this was real, and it literally was just a group of trolls on 4chan mm-hmm. that were messing with me. And come to find out, like, the way he established his legitimacy was so stupid, okay, as Q, as, like, this is what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And he would post on 4chan saying, you know, I have information that Trump, our fearless leader, the leader, is going to post this.
Leader. Okay.
And showed a screenshot of his Twitter account mm-hmm. with a time and date stamp. And then, or he said, it's going to do this, da da da, boom. And then somebody would go, holy shit, he just posted this. And they would take a screenshot, and it was other people manipulating the picture, the screenshot.
I
gotcha. All it was Photoshop, saying,
right.
He called this
and
20 minutes
happened.
Before Trump
yeah.
posted it. He's connected to this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he also did, like, well, you can see that.
So all it was Photoshop.
It was all Photoshop. It
that
was
simple. It was that simple of a stupid explanation.
It was so stupid was the basis for it.
Yeah.
And then they go into, like, interviews with people that are still in deep thinking about this QAnon shit and how a lot of the folks just kind of went away and they don't want to talk about it because it got fleeced.
Yeah.
But then there's the super hardcore crazies that are like, no, no, no. That's just what they want you to think. This is actually, you know, yeah. They're trying to put this down as a conspiracy theory. It was a prank. It wasn't a prank. This is really happening. This is a deep state.
It's a similar thing to the few. Go ahead.
Oh my god! So it's so good. I was just I found out about that and I was like, holy fuck! I didn't even press play. I started it, I paused it, and I went and made myself something to eat, and I turned my phone off for 2 hours.
Right.
Because it's relevant to me personally, right. But it's also relevant to pop culture, and it's something I've been screaming into the abyss for like 4 or 5 years of that QAnon is fucking, it was a prank started on 4chan.
Yeah.
It was a prank on people with smooth brains, and look how fucking far it went.
Yeah.
It's still going with some of the smoothest of the brains.
It's like part of the conspiracy, you know, about flying saucers and underground government out here at the airport. And again, people would ask me because I was here, you know,
right.
I moved here and I fly out of here and my business is out of here and that kind of thing. It's like, and they know that there's flying saucers buried. And so now I will have to talk to people like, see, look, we opened up, got all this dirt dug out of here. And we didn't find anything. Uh-huh. That's how deep the conspiracy goes.
That's how deep this conspiracy goes is that's what the dross site that they pulled out was a flying saucers like, off-gassing.
Where all you got to do is ask questions like, where are these train cars actually full of? And where are they taking it to?
Where are they taking them to? Area 63. And
right.
You
think that's all dirt in there?
Oklahoma.
Contaminated dirt? Uh-uh. Where's it going? And why is it covered up? See, why is it over here? And they have these lined, thick plastic, zipped up bags that they put it in. You know, and it's all those people over there. All by the way, they're suited up over there when they're doing this. And they have these breathing. You know, they're all. You know, that's part of the conspiracy.
Yeah,
because it's not really contaminated. It's not dangerous. They have to look like it is. And they put them in these burritos, and then they put those burritos, they're double lined, and then they go into the train cars, and those are zipped up.
Like the government did in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Right,
when
then it goes away. See, that's all you got to do is start running.
It's a nerve agent. No, it's not a nerve. It was a nerve agent gas explosion on a tanker.
And because I'm talking about it like now and kind of making fun of it, again, that proves that I'm part of it. That's how good I am at being part of this whole conspiracy.
If you squint just a little bit, you kind of look like Alex Jones. I'm so sorry. You have a way better hairline than him.
He talks about Alex Jones, too, this Channel 5 guy.
Oh, yeah.
Because he said, he was making a documentary, and he got NPR kind of got on this guy. NPR interviewed him, this Channel 5 guy, and they were pissed at him because he interviewed Alex Jones about something, and they were mad at him for platforming Alex Jones. But it was very obvious. He kind of bends more liberal, this Channel 5 guy, and Lex Fridman was asking about that, and he said, I wasn't platforming him to prove he was a good person or he was right and all that kind of stuff. But NPR, there was this interview with him on stage, and they kind of, what do you want to call it, they kind of ambushed him in a way.
Yeah.
And they really got to him, and it really bothered him a lot because, anyway, you have to kind of see that, what it was, but it wasn't a, because he asked about Alex Jones getting in trouble. He goes, I think he's a, you know, does he really believe it? Alex or Friedman would ask him, does he really believe it? He goes, I don't think so. It just kind of got out of hand, and he's rolling with it.
You had to lean into it.
Yeah, and that's what it was. And so, because all those people, you know, he's from Texas, and of course, he's a friend of Joe Rogan's, which I just like, that's really bothers me enough right there.
Yeah, to be friends with someone like that.
Yeah, we talked about that before in this silly little show.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But, is that it? Go watch the Antisocial Network. Make sure you watch Civil War.
Yeah, in fact, back to back, those would be great.
And watch the Zapruder film on repeat.
Boom, boom,
back
boom.
And to the left.
Boom.
Back
just,
and
just
to
watch
the left.
Watch the gunshot itself over and over and over.
Oh, my God. All right, folks, that's it for us. Have a good week.
Y'all, yes, have a good week.
Yallins.